Right now, you probably have this picture of the perfect customer in your head. Like when you sit down to write a pitch or design a marketing campaign or even just draft a critical email to your team, this really comforting movie starts playing in your mind.
Oh, absolutely. It's the ultimate creator's fantasy, really.
Right. And the audience in this movie is just incredibly rational. They are infinitely patient. I mean, you picture them sitting in this quiet, well-lit room, coffee in hand, completely focused.
Just hanging on your every word.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like they are ready to absorb every single carefully crafted syllable you put in front of them.
Right, we build these campaigns assuming the person on the other end is, savoring our feature lists and bullet points like a fine wine. Like they're just giving us the benefit of the doubt every single turn.
But then, I mean, then you launch the campaign, you send the pitch, and reality hits you like a freight train. Because the actual person looking at your page isn't in a quiet room at
Well,
all.
not even close.
No. They are like skimming your email while chasing a toddler, or they have 14 tabs open during a really boring Zoom meeting. They're distracted, they're highly skeptical, and you have exactly 3 seconds before they make this brutal snap judgment and just swipe away forever.
It's wild how fast it happens.
It is. So
Yeah.
we are doing a deep dive today into this massive invisible canyon that just destroys campaigns. We're looking at the gap between the audience we imagine we are talking to and the very real, very distracted audience that actually shows up.
And this canyon is really the silent killer of conversions because you rarely get a dramatic error message when a campaign
Right,
fails.
there's no flashing red lights.
Exactly. There's no broken link you can just easily fix. You just get these anemic, lower than expected results. And the team sits around a conference room, pointing fingers at the algorithm or the marketing channel, or maybe, oh, it's just a slow time of year.
It's always the algorithm's fault, right?
Yeah. Always. But the strategy research we are unpacking today argues the real culprit is a fundamental misunderstanding of the buyer's actual environment and their psychology.
Okay, let's unpack this
Yeah.
because to me, designing for that imagined customer feels a lot like setting up this romantic candlelit dinner.
Yeah.
You have the fine china out, the soft jazz playing, perfectly folded napkin.
Sounds lovely.
It is.
Yeah.
But your date is actually sprinting through the dining room while being chased by a bear.
That is, wow. Yeah, that's spot on.
Right. You have spent weeks optimizing for this serene environment that simply does not exist for the modern buyer.
No, the modern buyer is perpetually running from the bear, which really brings us to, honestly, the most sobering data point in the source material, which is the 10-second window.
10 seconds.
Yeah, under 10 seconds. Because when you build a campaign, you operate with full context. You intimately understand the problem your product solves. You feel the stakes. You have, lived and breathed the nuances of the solution for months.
Oh, yeah. My brain is essentially overflowing with the backstory of why this product matters. Like, I know every detail.
Right, but your audience arrives with absolutely none of that backstory. None of it. The research they cite from CXL and the Nielsen-Norman Group consistently proves that users decide if a web page is relevant to them in under 10 seconds.
That is just terrifying.
It is. And they are definitely not using those 10 seconds to read your beautifully crafted body copy or, analyze your three-paragraph mission statement.
Right, they're not reading the fine print while the bear is swiping at their heels.
Yeah.
So, how are they making that judgment so fast? I mean, what are they actually doing?
They're using visual hierarchy. When a distracted brain lands on a page, it does not read, it stands. It executes this rapid visual sweep, often what researchers call an F pattern or a Z pattern.
Okay, so their eyes are just kind of darting around the page.
Exactly. The eye darts to the top left logo just to establish trust. Then it sweeps across the primary navigation, drops down to the largest headline text, and scans for a high contrast button.
Like a big buy now or subscribe button.
Right, because the brain is hunting for a specific signal that screams, you are in the right place, and this solves your immediate pain. And if the design and that primary headline don't deliver that signal instantaneously, the cognitive load just feels too high and they bounce.
So, what does this all mean? Like, is the creator just being ignorant of human behavior?
Yeah.
Are we wildly underestimating the intelligence of the people we are trying to reach?
What's fascinating here is it has absolutely nothing to do with ignorance or underestimating the audience. It is a psychological trap called context collapse.
Context collapse.
Yeah, and it's heavily driven by the curse of knowledge. The creator hasn't assumed the audience is stupid.
Yeah.
The creator has just physically forgotten what it feels like to not know what they know.
Oh, wow.
Right. Like, when you already know the conclusion of your own argument, your brain automatically fills in the logical leaps on your landing page. You look at a vague headline and think, well, it makes perfect sense. But that's only because you have the invisible subtext running in your own head.
But the audience doesn't have your subtext. They just see a confusing sentence.
Exactly. They just see noise.
Because we know the window is tiny, and because we suffer from this context collapse, we tend to panic. I mean, I see this all the time. Creators realize they only have 10 seconds, so they try to cast the absolute widest net possible to catch the buyer before they leave.
Right. The instinct is to go broad.
Yeah. We rely on this incredibly generic framing. We think, you know, if I make this sound like it applies to literally everyone on Earth, then surely someone will bite.
But that panic response creates the exact generic messaging the research warns against. You end up with a homepage headline that says something profoundly empty like, we help businesses grow.
Which, I mean, that sounds so positive. Nobody's against businesses growing.
Sure. It is technically true. It's grammatically fine. But strategically, it is completely invisible.
Invisible?
Yeah, because the brain filters out information based on relevance and threat detection. When a message does not name a recognizable specific situation, the reader's brain just categorizes it as background noise.
It just tunes it out completely.
Exactly. Researchers refer to this as banner blindness. Now, we usually associate banner blindness with visual ads, like how our eyes literally skip over the right-hand column of a news site because we just expect ads to be there.
Oh, I totally do that. I don't even see them anymore.
Right, we all do. But the research shows this phenomenon absolutely extends to text and generic value propositions. The brain sees marketing speak and proactively edits it out of reality to save energy.
Just deletes it. So to break through that blindness, you have to use specificity as a pattern interrupt. I actually want to look at a direct comparison from the source material that really hammers this home.
Oh, the software example. That's a great one.
Yeah. They compared two phrases selling the exact same software. The first was marketing made simple, very broad, very generic. The second was built for solo operators who run their own ads.
This is such a stark difference.
Right. And according to the data, that second phrase stops the scroll entirely. It forces the brain to pay attention because it names a lived reality.
It functions as a mirror. The person reading it stops and says, wait, I am a solo operator and I'm completely exhausted from running my own Facebook ads.
Yes.
You have interrupted their habitual scanning pattern by injecting their specific reality directly into their visual hierarchy.
I struggle with this, though. Here's where it gets really interesting. But wait, if I say built for solo operators, aren't I leaving money on the table? Like, my immediate fear as a business owner is alienation.
The fear of missing out on a bigger market.
Exactly. What if a mid-sized agency lands on that page, assumes the tool isn't robust enough for a team, and just pounces? By getting that specific, aren't we intentionally shrinking our own market?
You know, it is the single most common fear in strategy. But it relies on a totally flawed understanding of how attention works. A message addressed to everyone is heard by no one.
Heard by no one.
Right. By saying marketing made simple, you didn't keep the agency on the hook while also catching the solo operator. You lost the agency, you lost the solo operator, the enterprise team, and everyone else.
Because it was just noise to all of them.
Exactly. Because none of them felt a sudden magnetic pull to your product. Specificity creates gravity. When you plant your flag and speak deeply to one specific pain point, you generate enough momentum to actually acquire a customer.
That makes a lot of sense.
And ironically, if the product is genuinely good, those mid-sized agencies will often find it, see how intensely the solo operators love it, and they'll just adapt it for their own use anyway.
Okay, so let's say you conquer the fear. You use high specificity, you interrupt their pattern, and you actually get their attention in that 10-second window. The bear is gone. They're sitting at the table. Why do they still freeze at the checkout page?
Ah, the checkout freeze.
Yeah, because looking at the research, getting them to stay is only half the battle. When they actually consider pulling the trigger, two silent killers wipe out the conversion.
Whoa.
Lack of urgency and choice paralysis.
Let's start with urgency because it is wildly misunderstood in marketing. We really have to draw a hard line between true contextual urgency and artificial pressure.
Artificial pressure being like those giant ticking countdown timers at the top of a checkout page.
Yes, or the red text flashing, only two left in stock. When you are selling, you know, a digital PDF that obviously has infinite inventory.
Right. Like, we know you aren't running out of digital file.
Exactly. It insults the buyer's intelligence. Today's consumers are highly sophisticated. They recognize fake scarcity instantly, and it immediately erodes trust.
So what does real urgency look like then?
True urgency is contextual to the buyer's life or the actual constraints of the product. It is a genuine reason why acting today is mathematically or practically better than acting next month.
Give me an example of that.
So it might be a serial compliance deadline they have to hit, or an intake cohort that physically starts on Monday, or maybe a hyper-relevant shift in their industry that they need to adapt to right now.
Got it. So it is the difference between yelling, buy this umbrella now because my timer is running out, versus pointing at the sky and saying, buy this umbrella now because the forecast says it will downpour in 15 minutes.
That is a perfect analogy. And without that rain cloud, without real contextual urgency, even highly motivated buyers will choose to defer.
They'll just put it off.
Yeah, they will look at your software and say, this is fantastic. I am definitely going to implement this next quarter.
Next quarter. The kiss of death.
And the research makes a terrifying point about deferral, especially in short purchase cycle businesses. Deferral doesn't mean delayed revenue. It means lost revenue.
Because they close the tab, you know, their kid asks for a snack, and they just completely forget you exist. You don't get a second chance at that moment of high intent.
Exactly. Once they're gone, they're gone.
But even if they want to buy right now,
yeah,
we somehow sabotage them with the second killer. Choice paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
We see these landing pages presenting five different subscription plans or five equal weight feature paths all lined up in a row.
Same font, same button color.
Same visual weight. Everything looks equally important.
And creators do this believing they are empowering the user. The logic is, you know, I will provide all available options so the buyer can craft their perfect solution.
Which sounds nice in theory.
Right. But in reality, you are inflicting a massive cognitive load on a brain that is trying to conserve energy. Comparing five similar pricing tiers requires holding a dozen abstract variables in your working memory simultaneously.
Oh, it reminds me of walking into one of those massive roadside diners that hands you a 50-page menu.
Yeah.
You are flipping past Greek food, breakfast all day, steaks, seafood, Italian.
Just endless options.
Yeah, and you have to hold all these different cravings in your head. The waitress is tapping her pen, the cognitive load spikes, and you just panic. You either order a basic grilled cheese or you find an excuse to leave.
Right, you just default to the easiest possible choice.
Contrast that with sitting down at a Michelin star restaurant. There is no menu. The chef hands you a curated one-option tasting menu. It is an absolute relief. You don't have to evaluate. You just have to consent.
And that Michelin star experience is the exact mechanism you need for a high-converting page. The solution to choice paralysis is almost never removing your other products from existence. It is about establishing a ruthless visual hierarchy.
Ruthless hierarchy.
Yes. You need one primary path, one hero call to action. Everything else, the secondary features, the alternative plans, they must be visually subordinated. You have to make the primary decision so obvious that the brain doesn't have to burn calories comparing options.
When a business realizes they have a hierarchy problem or a deferral problem, their immediate instinct is usually to open up their analytics dashboard. We are just obsessed with data.
Oh, completely obsessed.
But the source material warns that most creators fall into a massive trap here because they try to fix psychological problems using the wrong category of data.
This is such a critical point. The dashboards we obsess over, Google Analytics, email open rates, click-through rates, bounce rates, that is purely behavioral data.
Behavioral?
Yeah, and behavioral data is just a historical record of what happened. It tells you that 1,000 people clicked a link and 900 of them left the page without buying.
But it tells you absolutely nothing about why they left.
Exactly. It raises this important question. How do you fix a system when you only know the symptoms? Like if a campaign has a terrible email open rate, the standard behavioral reaction is to blame the subject line.
Oh, it wasn't punchy enough. Add an emoji.
Right. But a low open rate often stems from a massive mismatch in a previous interaction. If email number one promised a deeply researched white paper, but the link sent them to a thin, aggressive sales page, well, you broke their trust.
So they aren't ignoring email number two because the subject line is bad.
No, they're ignoring it because they learned your promises are hollow.
Wow. So to figure that out, you have to become a detective of attitudinal data. You have to understand the why behind the what. And the research suggests the only way to do this is by forensically reverse engineering the buyer's journey.
You have to work backwards.
Right. You start at the abandoned cart and work backwards, step by step, asking, what did the buyer need to believe at this exact moment to proceed?
And a critical piece of uncovering that attitudinal data is running audience simulations. The source provides this brilliant example from a group called Dayclerk. They simulate two potential buyers looking at the exact same software product.
I love this example.
It's so good. Buyer A is a 45-year-old franchise owner. Buyer B is a 28-year-old freelance designer.
And on a behavioral dashboard, these two people look completely identical. They both clicked the same Facebook ad, they both spent 2 minutes on the landing page, and they both genuinely need a scheduling tool.
But attitudinally, their internal monologues are worlds apart. The 45-year-old franchise owner operates in a high-stakes, logistical environment. If the software crashes, employees can't clock in and payroll gets delayed.
So their primary internal anxiety is reliability.
Exactly. They need to see words like enterprise-grade uptime and 247 priority support.
And this drastically changes the UI they want to see, too. That franchise owner wants a high-trust, high-touch process. They want a button that says, book a demo with sales, so they can look a human in the eye before rolling it out to 50 employees.
Meanwhile, the 28-year-old freelance designer has a totally different set of anxieties. They're worried about the learning curve and the aesthetics because they have to present this interface to their own high-end clients.
Yeah, they want it to look good.
Yes. They need to see words like intuitive, seamless, and beautiful. And they absolutely do not want to talk to a sales rep.
No, they would hate that.
They want a low-friction button that says, start free trial with Google, so they get instant gratification.
So sending both of those users to the exact same generic "we help businesses grow" landing page is a guaranteed failure. You haven't matched either of their attitudinal needs.
Right. Functional audience knowledge forces you to map out those divergent behavior paths, unique friction points, and specific UI expectations long before you write a single word of copy.
I do have to push back on this concept of knowing your audience, though. Because I feel like a lot of seasoned business owners listening might think, well, I've been in this industry for a decade. I talk to my customers every single day. I know exactly how they think.
Sure, that's a common feeling.
But the research highlights a genuine tension here. Is it possible that knowing your audience intimately over a long period of time actually becomes a strategic liability?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, yes, absolutely. Familiarity can breed a very dangerous kind of overconfidence.
Overconfidence.
Yeah. When an established creator or owner has spoken to hundreds of customers over the years, they develop an intuitive feel for the market. But eventually, that confidence solidifies into hubris. They stop actively running these simulations. They stop rigorously testing their assumptions.
They stop acting like detectives and start acting like experts.
And over time, this subtle linguistic drift occurs. Their framing moves away from the messy, real-world language the customer uses today, and it drifts toward the sanitized internal jargon of the company.
Well, that makes so much sense.
Contrast that with a new entrepreneur just entering the market. They might have a clunky landing page, but they possess a crucial advantage. They don't know anything. They are humble enough to test everything, and they listen with a beginner's mind. For the seasoned professional, the challenge isn't just acquiring audience knowledge, it is building a system to prove that your knowledge hasn't expired.
Maintaining the beginner's mind is incredibly difficult, but the source material leaves us with a highly actionable, almost Blinkist-level exercise to force that perspective shift. And you can do this the moment we wrap up. Find one real customer.
Just one is all you need to start.
Yeah. Could be someone who successfully bought, someone who got to the checkout page and bailed, or someone who did a discovery call and then ghosted you entirely.
Go back to the raw attitudinal data. Pull up their initial email, the transcript of their support ticket, or the recording of their sales call.
And write down the exact verbatim words they used to describe the pain they were in. Do not sanitize it. Do not translate it into your polished marketing speak. Capture their messy, desperate reality.
That is so important.
Then, open up your current homepage or the slide deck for your next pitch and look at the primary headline. If those two things do not rhyme, if the raw words of your customer are nowhere to be found in the carefully crafted copy you wrote, you have just located the invisible canyon. You have found the disconnect killing your conversions.
And, you know, this methodology is universal. We have framed this around landing pages and marketing copy today, but the psychology applies to any act of human persuasion.
Really anywhere.
Exactly. Whether you are selling complex enterprise software Or you are simply walking into a Tuesday afternoon meeting trying to convince your distracted boss to approve a budget increase.
Because your boss is running from their own bear.
Yes. They have zero context for the hours of prep you did. To break through, they need specific pattern interrupts, real contextual urgency to act now, and a ruthless hierarchy of choice that removes cognitive load.
You have to interrupt the bear chase in their mind before you can sell them the umbrella. We have spent this deep dive exploring the mechanics of bridging that gap, how to reverse engineer attitudinal data, reduce choice paralysis, and match your messaging to the brutal reality of the distracted buyer. But I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, something that pushes just beyond the boundaries of our source material today.
Oh, let's hear it.
Consider this. What if the ultimate hack isn't constantly tweaking your words? What if the real secret is fundamentally changing who you allowed to be your customer in the first place? If you find yourself constantly performing Olympic-level psychological gymnastics, building endless funnels just to get someone to pay attention for 10 seconds, maybe your messaging isn't the problem at all. Maybe, just maybe, you're simply hunting in the wrong forest. Think about it.